You're listening to UCB Ireland, serving the church, reaching the nation.
Joining me this week for Focus on Friday is Chris and Amy Stroop, and we've actually gone international for this edition of Focus on Friday. We're in Colorado Springs, and we are at the New Horizons building in Colorado Springs, and it's a pleasure to have you both on the radio. How are you?
Doing well.
Great. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, we're going to get into some really, really difficult conversations. We're going to talk about some real issues, some world issues that need to be talked about. But before we do any of that, I want to find out about you, a little bit more about you. Like, you know, Amy, were you a good little girl when you were growing up?
Yeah. I was a good little girl, actually. Yeah.
So were you born in a Christian family, into a Christian home? And yeah.
Yes, I was born into a Christian home. I always say there's probably never a time in my life when I didn't know Jesus or love him.
Okay.
Grown up in the church my whole life.
Right.
Went to a Christian college, actually majored in intercultural studies because I had a real heart for missions, and have always been interested in life overseas and integrating my faith with different cultures around the world.
And you knew that for you at a young age?
Yes, at a pretty young age. My sister went to, when she was about 18, she did a discipleship training school with YWAM, mm-hmm. and she did a training in Switzerland
okay.
for a couple months. And then from Switzerland, they went to Nepal. And I think that's when this kind of desire began, because I was connected to her and I saw what she was doing and I wanted more of that. My little sister, Brianna, also was very interested in that and wanted more of that in her life. And so that's kind of how our ministry, Joy to the World Foundation Thailand, was birthed, was out of that interest.
There's a whole lot in just what you said that we can unpack. And I don't want to go too deep into it, but there's a real tragedy here, isn't there?
There is, yeah. While my sister was in Nepal, she was sending pictures of, you know, orphaned children or needy children, kids that were very, very poor. Mm. And it really pricked the heart of my sister, Brianna. And she asked my parents if we could adopt a child from Nepal.
Wow.
And at the time, they had four kids, two in college,
wow.
one in high school, one, you know, almost in high school. And they just felt overwhelmed and kind of were like, maybe later.
Yeah.
But shortly after that, about 3 months after that, she was killed in a tragic car accident. And after that, my parents decided we want to go to Southeast Asia. We want to see what this is all about.
Right.
So they took a trip to India, Nepal, and Thailand. They had missionary friends in India, in Nepal, and then a connection in Thailand, a local couple that was national in Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did kind of this tour, and when they got to Thailand, they started hearing all these stories about trafficking. Drug trafficking, sex trafficking, all sorts of like underground economy stuff.
Mm.
And at the time, it was very hush-hush. Nobody really knew about it. Even in the U.S., we didn't have a lot of information.
How far are we going back?
This was in 1998.
And we didn't know 99. About it. And we didn't know about it.
We didn't have a lot of information about it here in the U.S. It was kind of more like, you know, in the dark.
Right.
It wasn't. People weren't talking about it, I should
okay.
probably say.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of like a shock to my parents to find out that girls as young as my little sister, who was 12,
right.
were being trafficked and put in situations where they were repeatedly raped up to 50 times a day.
Yeah.
It was just heartbreaking for them. And so they decided to do something about it. And they started this organization to fight against the human trafficking, and they partnered with this couple in Thailand and opened up a children's home that would be focused on prevention. And so they knew of a lot of kids that were at risk, because one of the biggest risk factors for human trafficking is poverty. It's it's like one of the three top root causes. And so they knew that there were these families all over northern Thailand that were at risk of their children being trafficked. And so they kind of handpicked about 14 little girls and opened up Brianna's House of Joy, which became kind of the first part of our organization back in 2003.
My daughter is involved with A21, mm-hmm. which is run by Christine Kane. Mm-hmm. And she's the advocate for A21 on the island of Guernsey. And even today, people are denying any awareness or that it happens, that it's there. Mm-hmm. We're going to come back to this in a minute. Chris, if I could bring you in just for a moment. How are you?
I'm doing well.
It's good to see you. And thank you for being with us. So there's a huge amount in Amy's childhood, but it was a stable childhood. Mm-hmm. What about yourself?
Yeah, we have very similar stories. I grew up in an evangelical Christian home. Mostly spent my childhood in Colorado, growing up in the mountains. So
it's a difficult place to live, isn't it?
It is really challenging. Yeah, you have to go outside, sun all the time.
Yeah.
High altitude's a little rough sometimes, but... So great family, great parents, both loving, caring. I have two brothers,
right.
So I'm the middle child of three. And grew up kind of like Amy, never knowing a time where I wasn't in the church or wasn't part of a community of faith. And that kind of was filled throughout my life when I got out into college and kind of started getting involved in student ministries and ended up transferring schools to pursue a degree in biblical studies. And that's actually where Amy and I met in Southern California.
I was going to say, how did you meet? Yeah, it was a school, yeah?
Yeah, so we met, we transferred in the same year, and it wasn't love at first sight, but it was close enough.
Did he pursue you, Amy?
He did. Well, I guess you could say I pursued him, because my dad told me I wasn't allowed to take my car home unless I had a passenger with me.
Okay.
And I was the passenger.
You need to have somebody who's driving with you. You can't drive 16 hours.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Chris was my driving buddy and sort of fell in love. We would take trips back and forth every Christmas and every summer. And it kind of, actually, it was only two times that we did that. And then we sealed the deal.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
There's a joke in Christian colleges in Colorado or in the U.S. that, you know, it's your ring by spring. So if you're not engaged by spring of your senior year, that's kind of the goal. So we were one of those couples.
I was engaged by spring.
Yep. But so we had a great, we always joke we've met when we were in our early 20s. And so we've kind of grown up together.
Right.
And lived lots of life together. Part of our story, we ended up, after graduating, we married, we lived here in Colorado for about a year. I worked at a church here in town, and I was applying for graduate school and ended up not getting into anywhere that I had applied, which was kind of a new experience for me because I had kind of always gotten into places. And we had this gap year that we didn't know quite what to do with, and an opportunity opened up for us to move to Thailand for a year.
Wow.
In 2004, and we lived there for almost a year, 2004-2005, and so we were there at the very early days of Brianna's House. We were the first ministry administrators, and so we worked with the U.S. donors, communication, and worked with the Thai team to make sure everything was running smoothly. And we look back at that now as such a gift, that it was a time when we were not quite sure where God was leading us. We knew graduate school was in the cards, but didn't quite know what that looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And so had this amazing opportunity to step into something that we had no idea what we were getting into, but are so glad. Yeah, we were really young, but so glad we did. And so those roots have grown deep now in Southeast Asia and in Northern Thailand in particular, and with the Hill Tribe people in particular in Northern Thailand.
It's quite an amazing journey, really, from the beauty of Colorado Springs and the easy life of Colorado Springs. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, it's not a difficult place to live in, is it?
No.
To go to somewhere like Thailand? The culturally is going to be massively different. But in terms of living, what was it like to live there?
At that time, it was difficult for a young newly married couple. There wasn't really any internet in our house. We had to go to an internet cafe.
All right.
And so we were pretty isolated. And then, you know, the people that we were working with weren't, they didn't know a lot of missionaries in the area. And so it was just kind of, we were the only Farong. They call them Farongs, white people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that was pretty difficult for us to kind of wrap our minds around and like figure out how to do life in another country. You know, we had to figure out how to drive in another country, on the other side of the road. So there was a lot of like some big learning curves in the beginning.
And I think another part of that is, as Amy said, her parents founded the ministry a few years earlier. And so we were directly reporting to my new in-laws. And so navigating both the marriage relationship and the working relationship, it actually was great. Like we had, you know, we had learning curves and things like that, but we loved working in that way and really found a great space to lean into how we actually work together. Amy and I have worked together most of our marriage. We're coming up on our 20th anniversary in January. And I think probably 15 years of that, we've worked together pretty much directly. And we look back at our time in Thailand and really say that that was a place where we learned, actually, we love this. Like,
Faith Inspiring Radio. This is UCB Ireland.
Welcome back to Focus on Friday, International Focus on Friday. We are in Colorado Springs. We're talking to Chris and Amy. And we've heard a lot in part one just about how Brianna's House of Joy was set up and the reason it was set up. This is a really difficult conversation to have because we're talking about young lives that are destroyed by trafficking. Now, the minute we hear trafficking, we hear about and we think about sex trafficking, because trafficking is to do with all kinds of slave labor and slavery. So over the next rest of this hour, we're going to find out more about what they do and why they do it. But I want to come back, if I may, to just before we went there, you said you're working for your parents because they set up Brianna's House of Joy. You're in Thailand. You're working for mom and dad. Question number one, what was it like to work for your mom and dad?
It's been really good. My parents are super supportive and encouraging of my place in the ministry. Just to go rewind a little bit, when Brianna died, it was just Brianna and I at home. My brother and sister had already gone off to college. I was driving. It was a really bad storm that came out of nowhere. And, you know, it was really genuinely an accident. And my parents were very supportive of me and my grieving process. And they really helped me through a lot of the hard feelings. They included me in their grief process, which I think was huge. If they had excluded me, I don't know where I would be today. I think I would be a different person, to be honest with you. And so they really gave me the space and the time. I was a junior in high school at the time, just 16.
You were 16.
I was a sophomore in high school. I was 16.
Yeah.
And so they really gave me the time and the space to process and heal in the way that, you know, God wanted to heal me.
Right.
And so they didn't pressure me to go to college. They didn't. They just kind of let me be and let me write my story, which was really powerful. But I think they always knew that I would be the one that would eventually come into the ministry and have that passion. And I think the beautiful thing about it is that we've been able, as a family, my parents and I really have been able to pour a lot of our grief into this ministry. And so it's been a way for us to heal. Which has been really beautiful. The Bible says God makes beauty from ashes.
Yeah.
And I think this is really an example. We wouldn't give Brianna away, you know, again.
Yeah.
But what he's done from her death has just been so incredibly beautiful.
Yeah.
When he went to graduate school, I started working for a small church, and they had a kind of a daycare within the church, and there were five different nationalities represented, and I was in charge of the daycare.
Wow.
And I always say that that really prepared me to do a lot of the work that I've done in my life. And I started to fall in love. When I was in college, I fell in love with all these different kinds of cultures. I just was wanted to eat it up, like wanted to learn about every different kind of culture. And, you know, anthropology was my favorite class and, mm-hmm. you know, just loved all that stuff. And so when I did this job, it was incredibly difficult to manage five different people from five different cultures. And they were all older than me. I was probably 24 at the time, 23, 24. And it was very difficult because in a lot of cultures, you know, you respect your elders.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really hard for me to be in a position of authority over all these women that were younger than, or that were older than me. But I say all the time, it prepared me for the next phase in life, which was we moved to Boston and started managing a house for international students. And so we lived with 20 international guys from all over the world. The house was set up kind of like a fraternity, and we managed that space. But in the back of my mind was always, what's going to happen to Brianna's House of Joy?
Right.
Because I sort of took a break to support my husband in what he was doing. But I always knew eventually I wanted to get back to that. I wanted to, you know, get more plugged in and be more involved. And my dad at the time, my mom would go over probably once or twice a year. And then my dad was going over like three times a year to Thailand. And I always wanted to be with him and go with him, but I could never make it happen. And so when we quit the job at the International House, that's when I called my parents and said, I want to work for the ministry. And of course, they were like, we know. Yeah. So I started working for them, doing the website. I redesigned the website, which is not my strength, but they really needed a website. And I thought it would be good to have something somewhere people could go to learn more about our ministry. And so I kind of started doing that. And as I was doing that, I was reading up on the histories of all the girls that we've had through our home. Mm-hmm. And it was so powerful to kind of read these histories, where they've come from, you know, who their parents are, who their families are, what they've been through, and what led them to a place like Brianna's House of Joy. Because, you know, like I said before, these are kids that are highly at risk. They're being abused at home.
Yeah.
Their families are so poor, they can't even feed them, you know, anything like that. And so they've all come from a really traumatic past. And so I just began reading the histories and then kind of building the website, and one thing led to another, and I just kind of got more and more involved. And my parents were grateful. I mean, my dad's always worked full time. He started the New Horizons Foundation, and then he started Joy to the World Foundation, and you know, he was relieved almost to have some extra support administratively and extra hands to kind of help out with what was going on. And my mom too. I mean, she's always been very involved relationally with the ministry. She loves the kids like her own. She loves our staff. She pours into them a lot. And so for her, I think it was a little bit of a relief to have more of the administration duties like taken off of her plate.
Right.
So I started doing that, and I've been doing that for probably about 7 years now. And last year, my parents decided to officially take the step back and say we're not running the ministry anymore, and they passed the baton, and now I'm the executive director, and you know, I feel like I'm learning new things every day and trying to figure out how to
new responsibilities and a new way of dealing with things.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So but Chris has always been so supportive of what I'm doing, and you know, my passion is his passion, and I think we...
It's an interesting thing as a husband and wife, because you married young, early 20s?
Yep.
Yeah. And you began to work together, early 20s. So were you ever in a situation where you had separate jobs, or was it always like, no, we're married now, we're going to work together?
Yeah, so when we left Thailand in 2005 and moved to Connecticut, neither of us had ever been to Connecticut, but I was starting graduate school. And so I was pursuing a master's in religion, in study of Bible. And so that was where Amy started working at the church. And so that was like our season apart.
Okay.
But we lived on campus. We started our family there. So we were very much, obviously, very much connected in what we did. And then when we moved up to Boston 3 years later in 2008, that's when we started working together at the International House. And so it was viewed as a co-run position. So we were, husband and wife was the managing couple.
That was an important thing to do.
Yeah.
But myself and my wife work together. We're 35 years married next month, and we work together. And this is the first time that we've ever worked together. We've always supported each other in what we've done. Mm-hmm. This is the first time we've ever come together to work together. And it's challenging. It can be challenging because I know what I'm like. And I know how I mix her head up. I would be nothing without my wife. She is the detail. And when I have an idea, she makes sure that the process works. I go and do my thing, and she just makes sure the process works. Mm. How, there are going to be couples out there who go, oh, I love this idea. I love this idea. Especially young couples who go, this is a great, yeah. How did you make it work?
We're very much like you and your wife.
Okay.
But I'm you.
Okay. All right.
I'm the one who's like, vision, new things, you know, chasing after new ideas. And
right.
He's the one that's like, okay, how's that going to work?
Yeah, right. The strategy, the let's figure out the plan and stick to it. Yeah.
But it works out really well. Like, I don't think I could be married to somebody who's like me.
No,
we would be crazy.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
No,
yeah,
we would be all over the place.
You need both sides of a coin.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have that. I remember when we got married first, we were part of our worship team. And there was always the kind of rule in our church in the 80s that, you know, you get married to have a year off of everything to get to know your wife or your husband. And we came back from a honeymoon from Florida, jet lagged straight into a worship tour. Yeah, it was just like, how did you manage husband and wife and co-partner? See, this is the important thing for young couples to know, that actually there has to be a process to help that happen.
Yeah, I think a big part of our journey was really being introspective about ourselves and knowing ourselves well.
Okay.
So both of us really are open books where we process verbally. And so we did a lot of processing together those first few years. And I think that really helped us to figure out what we're good at and what we're bad at.
Okay.
Both in the home setting, but then also in the work setting. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's been a huge part of kind of the practical side of it. I think the other side is like, we just were so dependent on God. Like, we had no idea what we were doing. We were, you know, when I met Amy, she was still struggling, kind of at a place where she could speak about her grief in a way that was a little bit separate. It had been about 5 years since the accident, and so she had a little space to talk through that. And so processing those things together and realizing, like, we are so dependent on God. Even in my own journey of, like, always getting kind of going to schools where I wanted to go and getting in, I succeeded academically, and then to have the doors all shut in my face. And then for her to be next to me and say, hey, what about Thailand? And just this idea that never would have come into my head, but for her was like, that was right on the top of her head.
Yeah.
And so that combination of me, the planner, all right, I'm planning 15 years out for grad school and potential jobs. And she's like, well, what if we do this? We have a year. What if we jump in this thing? And so that combination, I think, for us has been so life-giving in so many ways, where neither of us would be where we're at professionally without the other. And I think that's been so critical for us. But also, the other big part I was going to mention is just learning to apologize quickly. When you work together and you live together, you step on toes a lot.
Yeah.
And so just the owning things, even things that aren't even yours, especially for young couples, like owning your mistakes, owning how you've hurt somebody, even if it was unintentional, quickly, and restoring that relationship, I think, has been so key for us to be able to work together, especially in difficult situations, whether it be our own personal grief or wrestling down drunk college students in the middle of the night, and, you know, everything in between.
Well, and I think there's so much, like, prayer that goes into, you know, a lot of the decisions that we've made and been led by. It's like, you know, you pray, and then you just kind of take that leap. And my dad always says, well, whatever God wants for the Stroops, you better get out of the way, because he's done some really amazing things for us and move mountains for us that we never thought he could move. So I just think that's a huge piece of it.
And one of the things we learned early on in Thailand, we're out driving with the national couple, and we're in the middle of the forest up in northern Thailand, and it's near the Myanmar border, which was an active civil war at that time. And so, you know, he had kind of prepped us of like, this is dangerous. We don't want to go off the path. We just want to go to this village, interview this family to see about this girl who potentially could come to the home, and then make our way out. And we were like, all right, great. Like, well, we're here with you. And so we're heading home, and it's starting to get dark, and we're driving through the forest on a dirt road and kind of bouncing around. And he looks at me, he's like, oh, I think I was supposed to turn back there. And I'm like, oh, what? And he's like, yeah, I think I missed my turn. And we're just like, okay, well, what are we going to do? And he just kind of giggled and said, well, sometimes you just have to trust and go. And we ended up driving, you know, the next mile or so, and ended up making it on the road, the main road, a few miles farther up the road than we thought we were going to be. But so it all worked out. But that motto of trust and go has been something that we've lived by for most of our life, that oftentimes I'm the planner. I want to know that something is going to succeed before I dive in. And that motto of trust and go for us as a married couple has been so critical at that point where we're like, we're not sure where God is leading, but we're going to trust and take this step. We're going to make this move because we're confident in God.
Take us with you wherever you go. UCB Ireland.
This is Focus on Friday from Colorado Springs. My guests today, Chris and Amy. We've just been talking about working together, early married life. We've been talking about very serious issues, and we're going to talk about them in deeper right now. Before we get into that, though, I want to talk about trust and go. Amy, is that where you live or not?
I do. I live there. And I was going to say before that I am the type of person who's like, I want to trust and go before I know exactly how everything's going to pan out. I want to take the leap. And so I think that's a place I've pushed Chris a lot on, that he can tend to be a little bit uncomfortable with the leaps that I want to take. But then at the same time, sometimes he'll pull me back and say, it's not time to take a leap yet. We need to continue to pray and seek God and then move from there. So,
The heart is there, but the timing might not be correct. Yeah.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, you studied to be a priest or an Anglican priest. Is this correct?
Yeah. So I am a priest in the ACNA, Anglican Church in North America.
Okay.
And I had kind of a circuitous journey in this process. If you ask 20-year-old Chris whether or not I would be a pastor, I'd be like, oh yeah, at some point in my life, I'm going to be a pastor. But I quickly started pursuing an academic route. And so I went and did a master's in essentially history, ancient history, with a focus on the biblical world.
Right.
And then from that master's, we moved up to Boston so I could pursue a PhD in the same field, religious studies, with a focus on ancient Christianity.
Wow.
And my heart, my passion, my calling was really to teach at a secular university as a Christian, to teach the Bible. And oftentimes what happens in the academic world is Christians tend to go to conservative Christian schools to teach.
Right.
And secular folks who are anti-Christian tend to go to secular schools.
Yeah.
And so in the U.S., a lot of our schools have religious studies departments, and the folks who are teaching the Bible don't really care about it. And oftentimes they have some issues in the past or antagonism with Christians, which shape the way that they teach.
Okay.
And so really my heart and my passion were to pursue that as a calling, to be a Christian. And so I pursued the academic route before I went back towards the pastoral route. And so I got my PhD, published my dissertation, got a job at a major research university, and was settled in, and we were settled in Boston, and we had helped plant an Anglican church. I was the head elder,
Wow.
head of the parish council or whatever for many years there, and no kind of desire to seek ordained ministry. I actually saw it as a liability to my career. And
so you never actually became ordained?
So I didn't at that point. And
at that point, okay. That point,
yes. So
the journey goes further.
And we, yeah.
So let me interject something. When he was in college, like doing his undergrad, yeah, he had a couple of different professors that he was pretty close to and would get mentored by regularly. And one of them said, you know, I think you can do this. Go for it. And the other one said, don't do this. You're going to lose your faith.
Wow.
You're not going to be a Christian in 10 years.
Wow.
And that really pushed him to go ahead and do it. Because he just was like, I'm not going to do that. I believe in God. I'll stay that route. And so.
Yeah. And so in 2016, I finished and got a job at Boston College,
yeah,
in Boston. And I was teaching Catholic and Jesuit priests how to read the New Testament,
right,
at a graduate level, mm-hmm, and I loved it. It was what I had trained for, what I was planning to do with my life, and we had just bought our first house in 2016 after we had left the International House, and
right,
we were settled. We had our church that we helped plant. We had our small local school for the kids. Amy was doing work with Brianna's house in Thailand, and
yeah.
And I had a job at a university, and we were set. And that's typically when God comes to shape
things up. I was just about to say, I can feel a but.
Yep.
Yeah. But God moment.
Yeah. And our but God moment for me, Amy, may be a little different space, was we came to visit family in Colorado, and we come every year,
mm-hmm,
visit family. And usually at the end of the trip, I'd be feeling, I can't wait to get home.
Yeah.
And home was Boston.
Yeah.
And home had been Boston for so long. And for whatever reason, we came one summer, 2017, and I got on that plane. I was leaving a little early. The family was staying a few days later, so I was leaving early to get back for work. And I got on the plane, and I thought, I'm leaving home.
Wow.
And I didn't know quite what that was, but I remember mentally saying, like, I need to take note of this. Yeah. Something's stirring.
Yeah.
And so when I got home, Amy and I were talking that night, and she said, what would you think about moving to Colorado and you know,
I said,
working,
would you ever be open to it?
To moving to Colorado and working with my dad. And she had asked that question before multiple times throughout her marriage, and it's always, no, here's my plan.
Yep.
I am in school for this. We are going where the job is for the, mm-hmm, academic world. You don't get to pick where you live. You just go where the job is. And we had, you know, I had a million excuses I could have made, a million reasons that were all legitimate and valid, that made sense to say, no way, why would we ever do that? But for whatever reason, well, I know the reason, mm-hmm, but my response was, I'm open to wherever God leads. And that started the process of us moving back to Colorado in 2018, and me starting to work with Joy of the World Foundation, and Amy to take a more active role with Joy of the World Foundation Thailand and Brianna's House in the ministry there.
Let's talk about Brianna's House of Joy. Let's talk about the difficult conversation, the, mm-hmm, difficult topic, mm-hmm, because it's wonderful to hear who you are and what you are. I want to hear what you're doing now and why we need to be aware of this. It's time. It's beyond time.
Mm-hmm.
We have to know this.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about your perspective on trafficking.
I mean, I've done most of my research is around Thailand,
okay,
trafficking in Thailand.
Yeah.
I know it happens everywhere. I know it happens in Colorado Springs.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's all over the, mm, world. But I focus most of my research on northern Thailand because that's where we work. That's where we focus. The problem is huge. I mean, it's sex trafficking alone is a $1 billion industry. People's desire for that is not going away. It's not something that we can like get rid of. And so what our approach and the way that we've looked at things is we need to do our best to prevent it. Because none of these kids want to be in the situation that they're finding themselves in.
True.
And the parents don't want them in this situation. However, I will tell you that oftentimes parents will send their kids knowingly into this predicament because they're desperate. And going back to what I was saying about reading these girls' stories,
yeah,
I realized as a mother of three kids, You have to be extremely desperate to do something like that.
Yes, yeah, you do.
To be willing to sacrifice, essentially sacrifice one of your children so that you can feed the rest of your family and take care of your family. It must be a really, really dark place. And so that's what we really focus in on is preventing. So we will take kids and bring them to Brianna's house. And our, you know, one of our main goals is to actually transform the culture of human trafficking in northern Thailand. And so we do that by educating kids, giving them a really solid foundation in education so that they can go on to complete all the way up through college. What we found over the years is that kids that don't graduate college or don't have a trade or something that they can do, they are pretty easily kind of go back into a lifestyle that we don't want them to be in. And so if we stick with them and they're part of our family forever, then we can provide a college education. We can get them all the way through and starting a new career so that they can provide for themselves in a way that, you know, they're thriving. They're not just surviving, they're thriving and they're contributing and they're making a difference.
Listen, I'm just going to say this. We are in the middle now of a big storm here in Colorado Springs, and it's suddenly gone from really, really sunny and warm to really, really stormy. And what you're hearing in the background is the rain. But I'm not going to stop this because this is so important. I love the fact that it's prevention that you're working
prevention.
On. It's almost prevention rather than rescue.
Yes, there are organizations all over northern Thailand that do great job at rescue.
Good.
And we need that.
Yeah.
But we really put all of our focus on the prevention piece. And so, you know, education is key. If they don't have education, they cannot earn a good income. Mm-hmm. They can't make valuable contributions to society, and people will continue to discriminate against these people. But if they're educated and they have like a strong, solid foundation that they can build on, then they can start contributing to the society and people will respect them. And like I said, we're really trying to raise up influencers that will influence their culture and change that identity around the human trafficking that's just so pervasive all over northern Thailand.
There are going to be people listening to this that says, yeah, that's all very well, but that's over there. That happens over there. It doesn't affect me. And people in Ireland are going to go, it doesn't affect Ireland. Sure, Ireland's... No, it doesn't. But we know it does. What can we do to make a change? How can we change this? What can we do?
I mean, I think that the first step is bringing things into light. We've mentioned a few times that often this is underground, even here in Colorado Springs, which in the U.S. is viewed as a evangelical Christian hub, has a large trafficking problem. There have been prostitution arrests and things at every hotel in Colorado Springs.
Wow!
From the cheapest to the fanciest, and I think
is this child trafficking or is it
this is
teen and older?
This is all kinds of trafficking.
All kinds, yeah.
And so there's been recent trafficking, solicitation arrests here in this area, and I would venture to say in every area. There are those people that are soliciting underage children for sexual issues, and it has to come out because as long as it stays hidden, with the internet, you can hide so many things.
Right.
That we have to figure out a way, whether that's through legislation or through activism or through public awareness campaigns, to start bringing this to the front. And I think that's the first step.
Yeah.
It's the necessary step. It's not the only step, but
yeah.
Well, and I also think that the education piece is huge, but also thinking about how you're spending your money, for example. You know, one of the things that when I started to see all these families that were affected by this, I started a fair trade company that's associated with our ministry. Because I wanted to provide jobs for some of these moms that were desperate and hopeless without anything. And so now we have 5 or 6 women that are employed with our organization. They make, beautiful handmade products that we sell in Thailand, and we also sell them here in the U.S. So even thinking about the way that you're spending your money, like, am I going to put $100 into this, and Amazon purchase, or right. I can buy this bag for $100 and support, you know, this anti-trafficking organization. So there's little ways that, that people can get involved and be a part of.
It's important to know as well, and to let people know, that it's not just about sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. There are many levels of trafficking. Mm-hmm. What else do you come across in Thailand?
So in Thailand, I mean, there's just human slavery everywhere. There's kids that are selling milk on the streets. There's kids that sell flowers in the night market. And that's not their choice. I mean, they're being forced to do that work.
Okay.
And so there's a lot of that all over northern Thailand. And it's because people just are so poor. And they just, you know, they're living on $2 a day. And in Thailand, I can tell you that when we lived there, what, 18 years ago, $2 a day was a lot more money than it is today.
Wow.
It's not enough. It's not even close to enough. So.
Well, I think there's a big labor trafficking in the fishing industry in mm-hmm. Thailand as well, and then farming industry both in Thailand and in the U.S., you know, there's a significant percentage of the vegetables and fruits that are in our supermarkets that come from trafficked individuals or people who are forced labor. I was mentioning this at my church in a sermon and a couple weeks ago, and somebody came up after, well, what do we do? And I said, well, the first step is you need to know. That's because you can't change your activity if you don't know. And so, you know, in our particular context, it may be buying local fruits and vegetables, although Colorado is not known for its produce.
Right.
But trying to localize things, I think, is one way we can combat it. Because a few years ago, I did some kind of a deep dive into our supply chain of the clothes we're buying and the food we're buying as a family, and I just got so depressed as I was diving in because you can't track anything.
Right.
Anymore. And so there are a number of nonprofits that are starting to do some of this work of figuring out supply chain things. But that as far as people on the ground, it's about the choices, because where our money goes, that's where the investment goes from company owners and businesses. And if we're not supporting the things that are cheap because they have trafficked labor, then we are, you know, we're making that conscious choice.
UCB Ireland. More than just words, more than just music.
Welcome to the final part of Focus on Friday here on UCB Ireland. Our guests today have been Chris and Amy, and we've been talking about the very serious issue of human trafficking. We've been talking about the wonderful projects and the wonderful process of prevention. We've been talking about education. We've been talking about teaching people that they don't have to be that way and providing them with a future. Guys, there are going to be people listening to this and go, but I can do nothing. In all this, that's all very well. They're them. That's what God did for them. And that's what God led them to do. And they went to Thailand, they saw it, and then they come back, and America is a brilliant place for doing all that. But I'm sitting here in Ireland and I can do nothing. But that's not the truth, is it? So what can we do?
Well, there's several ways to get involved. We have an amazing donor community that, you know, people can donate anywhere from $25 a month. Some people donate $1,000 a month.
Right.
And you can sign up through our website to be a part of our, we call it the village.
Okay.
It takes a village to raise all these children.
I love that.
And so we send out, right now we're doing quarterly newsletters where you get updates on what we're doing, how we're ministering to these kids, the programs that we do. We really can't do it without donor support.
Okay.
We use donor support to pay all of our staff, to run the programs, pay for education, school uniforms, medical, everything is run by our donors. And so they are a huge part of the equation. Another way to get involved is by, if you reach out to me through our website, I can give you information about becoming an ambassador through our Five Tribes Fair Trade program, where you can sell some of our products, either, you know, at your church or to your friends. We're looking for people that are willing to kind of help us promote some of these products so that we can continue to raise money and raise awareness.
Yeah, I think the other thing is just to, again, pay attention to what's going on, that there are places in Ireland that are doing this good work.
Yeah.
And, I don't know any offhand, but I think a quick Google search, any kind of just basic research of trafficking prevention, child trafficking prevention, will find you some great organizations in your local area that you can actively get involved in, that you can jump in. You can do it for the sake of the gospel, which is why we do this, because we believe that in the dignity and worth of every human being made in God's image. And whether it's a Christian or a non-Christian organization, that you will be a light in those places. And so I think that there's a deep place for more people to get out and jump on in, whether that's with our organization in Thailand or with something local. But there's so much space and so much need to be able to serve and to give.
My dad always says that we have three ways to give. We can give our time, our talent, and our treasure.
Yeah.
And I believe that God created us to give. Mm-hmm. And that's how we unlock the greatest joy. And so I think that giving in one way or another, if you don't have finances to give, you can give your time, you can give your talent. There are ways that you can be a part of something like this, even from Ireland.
Yeah. It is important that we're aware of this. And one of the things I was going to say there was people might be afraid of putting into their Google search, child trafficking. Please make sure you put prevention in there.
Yes. Okay?
Please put the word prevention. And I want to say to the listeners, guys, we have a responsibility. I was reminded recently of a great message by Dr. Michael Youssef that I heard a couple of years back at NRB, which is in America. It's the National Religious Broadcasting Convention in America. And all world broadcasters were in this room. And he said, we have a responsibility. Mm-hmm. So I'm not trying to stir anything up. But as UCB Ireland CEO, I say we have a responsibility. And our responsibility is not to paint over the cracks in our society. Our responsibility is not to say, not on my watch, it doesn't happen here. Our responsibility is to listen to Amy and to Chris and to listen to others. My daughter is involved in anti-trafficking. And for this one subject to say, we will be a voice and we will stand together. And I don't know what that does for you, but I hope by hearing just a normal woman and a normal man with a normal married life get involved in an extraordinary work will stir you to do something and stir you to help those who are helping save and prevent lives from being trafficked. You don't have to go to do. You just have to get involved. Guys, can I ask you to pray as we close this off? This is an unusual way to finish this hour, but I think there's an important thing going on here. And I think actually, as UCB Ireland, we're going to take it further. We're going to go deeper with other situations. But for this moment, can we close off today and focus on Friday with a prayer?
Yeah.
I'll leave it to both of you to lead. Thank you.
Father, we thank you for just the work that you are doing to spread your gospel, your good news that not only redeems us for all eternity, but redeems us here and now and begins the process of your restoration of your goodness and the rightness and all of the glory that you have intended for us. Lord, I just pray that if anyone has something stirring in their heart to seek out a way to help, whether that is with their time or their talent or their treasure, that they would seek you, that they would seek those around them, that they would seek folks that they trust, that they can dive in, and they can commit a part of their time to this ministry of restoring your people to their dignity, to rescuing the most vulnerable, to caring for widows and orphans and those who have no one to care for them. Lord, we know it is hard work. It's deep work, it's painful work, but we also know that you're good and that you restore that pain and you are making all things right. Lord, your son suffered so that we could embrace the lot that you've given to each of us, and see that there is glory on the other side. Lord, we just pray that you would be present, that you would show up here in Colorado and in Ireland, that you would make yourself known.
God, we thank you for the great privilege of being able to join you in bringing your kingdom here on earth. Lord, I do pray that you would continue to draw us closer and closer to that end. Lord, that you would move people's hearts to do whatever they can in their power to bring your kingdom down to earth, whether it's giving of their time or their talent or their treasure. Lord, I do pray that you would make that clear to everyone who's listening today. Amen.